Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Hi, I'm Ando.
And I'm Fer.
And we host Niñas Bien Podcast.
We want to invite you to listen to our show.
Niñas Bien means good girls in Spanish, but you have to know that this is not a podcast for good girls.
Or for girls at all. It is a comedy podcast, so everyone is welcome to listen.
We talk about sex, relationships, technology.
We recommend movies and TV shows and discuss pop culture in general.
And there is Chisme Ajeno too.
A section we have just to gossip about everyone. So you'll find something you like here.
And you'll practice your Spanish.
The cleanest Spanish you'll find, we promise.
And if you already hablas español,
vamos a ser tus nuevas amigas. We'll be your friends for the non-Spanish speakers.
New episodes every Monday and Thursday.
Hosted by Acast and available to all audio platforms.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.
Welcome to Condensed Histories, the podcast that takes pop culture and reveals the real history underneath. I'm your host, Jem Deducciu, and I'm going to start off with a little bit of a quiz for you. So, what do the following movies have in common? RoboCop. The Hurt Locker. Plane. Yeah, I know I did a whole episode on Plane, but what do those three movies have in common? Let's face it, they're not even in the same genre. They weren't filmed in the same decade as each other. They don't have any of the same cast members. And whereas you're going to turn around and say, well, hang on, isn't the episode called Snipers? It is worth remembering that in RoboCop, there are no snipers. So the answer is all of them have a variant of a type of gun called a Barrett M80. Now, as soon as you start getting technical with firearms, a whole bunch of people glaze over. That is the only time I'm going to get technical. If you are super into your firearms, I'm aware that the M80 is a family which have a number of different designations going into the M100s. And the point of it is, I'm a guy, and I do my best to talk about broad subjects, but sometimes I would just like to talk about something cool that's a bit violent. And we're into the world of snipers and the way that they're portrayed in movies and TV shows, and it's really interesting to me because I ended up having a favorite gun, and that is this Barrett M80. What is it? It's a very large, high caliber, technically anti-materiel rifle, in reality largely used as an extreme long range sniper's rifle. And you might turn around and say, well, Jem, as you said earlier, there are no snipers in RoboCop. What's that got to do with anything? Well, if you remember the movie and towards the end, the group of bad guys to take down RoboCop get these brand new assault rifles. And even at the time, I looked at that and thought, they're having real difficulty just maneuvering these weapons. And they're so incredibly long, they don't seem to be a convenient weapon to be using as an assault rifle. The standard type of firearm that a soldier would use going into battle. Somebody's going to fall over this thing, and it's clearly heavy too. The reality is, this was brand new, because it was straight out in the 1980s, the first Barrett M80, and it was this sniper's rifle, this anti-materiel rifle, with some stick-on bits to make it look a little bit more futuristic-y. And indeed, right at the very end, RoboCop uses one of these correctly for its use to take out an ED-209. And in the movie, you see things blowing up everywhere when they fire these guns, which is inaccurate and incorrect, and that's not how it works. But once you know about this weapon, the other movie that has consistent use and is even on the poster of it is The Accountant. That's Ben Affleck's movie where he plays an autistic accountant who's also a hitman. That's a real thing. And actually, it's, an underappreciated film. When it came out, they said, look, because the central character has autism, he's very quiet, you don't find out a lot about his personality, there are flashbacks. But one of the things about autism is they're not super emotional people. And that's valid. I think Ben Affleck does a pretty good job with it. And it's a good thriller. So like Plane, if you go into The Accountant thinking, Jem said this is going to be one of the greatest movies ever. No, it isn't. But if you want a Saturday night interesting thriller that has enough action to keep you entertained, but enough story to actually hang it all together, The Accountant and Plane are both examples of that kind of genre. I would argue that Plane is more enjoyable. Accountant is probably a bit classier, for want of a better phrase. But then you get something like Hurt Locker, which it's one of those films that's now been out for so long, it's a whole generation that haven't really grown up with it. And you really should, because this started the career of the actors who were Hawkeye in the Avengers movies and Falcon, now the new Captain America. And so you've got those two actors earlier in their careers showing you that, do you know what? We're proper actors. We don't need to have dress-up outfits. And in the case of Jeremy Renner, who plays Hawkeye, this was his real breakout role. Nobody really knew of him in anything before. And actually, he did a great job in a movie called The Town, a crime thriller directed and starring Ben Affleck. So there's a little connection going on there. Also, I happen to like the fact that he plays a pretty psychotic guy whose name is Jem. So it's nice to hear my name being used in a movie for a male character. That's the whole other thing. But it is interesting that this gun is, let's get only a little bit technical, people. So when you are talking about ammunition in the modern sense, when you have a bullet, it's not really a bullet. It's a bullet inside a casing. Now, if you think of, because almost everybody has seen scenes where a gun is being loaded, as in a handgun, think of things like Lethal Weapon, etc. A standard sidearm would quite often, there are different sizes of ammunition, but that is a standard 9mm round. So you all know what I mean when I say a 9mm round, even if you haven't heard that phrase before. So there's a little brass semicircle, a copper-looking semicircle, and then there is a brass rectangle behind it. Now, that is a classic example of a modern projectile bullet. So the little copper bit is the actual bullet. It's the actual projectile. That is probably about the same size as your fingernail on your small finger, on your little finger. It's not very large. Maybe it's the next finger up. I don't know how big your hands are. But the point is, when you put it that way, it's like, what, and that can kill you? Well, it's not about the size, it's about the velocity, it's about the kinetic energy. Because when a bullet detonates, when you fire a gun, an explosion is happening inside a chamber, and that explosion is going faster than the speed of sound. That is why it makes that noise. It's breaking the sound barrier. This is why, and I've mentioned this before, why silencers in movies and that distinct, I'm hoping that Greg's going to put it in, you all know what I mean, that very distant, almost whisper noise that guns make as soon as you put that big fat tube on the front of the gun. That's not how it works. The actual name for them is not silencer, it's suppressor, and it can reduce the noise, but it still would be as loud as somebody standing next to you shouting. It's not something where you are hearing kind of noises and everyone's like, oh no, that was completely covered by the sound of a passing car or something like that. No, you'd still know a gunfire is happening. So part of the reason for that is because of the explosion. Part of the reason that is the breaking of the sound barrier, and part of that is the crack of the bullet going through the actual barrel. So there are several different sounds, and the suppressor can only suppress so much noise. The point here is that the entire cartridge with the brass end and the copper front is about as long as half of your little finger. That is why you get something like the gun that Martin Riggs has in lethal weapon called a Beretta, different company to Barrett. I'm sorry, I've just picked something there with similar sounding names, but that's how you can fit 15 bullets into the grip of the gun, into the magazine that you push into the grip of the gun, because they're all pretty little. Then, when we go up to a military rifle, the standard NATO-sized bullet is 7.62. So, compared to 9mm, this is bigger. And you all know what that looks like when you've seen people with big belts of ammunition being thrown over their shoulders. In that one, compared to the little bullets that you get in handguns, these are still copper-coloured, but they are now to an actual point. And the whole thing, when you include the brass casing behind it, it's the same principle. The brass casing is where the gunpowder or gun cotton is, and that is detonated by the firing pin going into the back of the bullet, which triggers it and therefore detonates and then pushes out that larger pointy brass projectile out the front of a rifle. It's bigger and therefore it has a bigger explosive charge and therefore can travel more accurately over a longer distance. And because of that, and with the fact that the actual projectile itself is larger, it means it will cause more damage when it hits a human being. Sorry about this, but this is the point of projectiles. Why am I telling you all about this stuff? Because the Barrett fires a 50 caliber round. So the 50 cal is a machine gun, a heavy machine gun that was invented just after World War I, and yet it is still in use in the American military today. There is very few things in modern military that's over 100 years old and still a genuinely useful piece of equipment to be used in a combat zone. But the 50 cal and the smaller 30 cal, these guns are just big black rectangles with a long barrel that's got holes drilled into it for coolant, and they are belt-fed machine guns. It's those two types of guns, 30 cal, slightly smaller version than the 50 cal. Both of those were used extensively in World War II, including when you see the American airplanes flying along and clearly they've got machine guns in the wings, it's either a 30 cal or a 50 cal, basically. So that's how important and durable and flexible that weapon system is, that it can be used in vehicles, it can be used by infantry, it can be put on a tripod, it can be put on the back of a Jeep. But a 50 caliber round is so much bigger than what I've just described. Just the pointy bit at the end, the ballistic bit, do you remember how I've been describing it with the other sizes? Well, it's bigger than your longest finger on your hand. And it's obviously proportionally wider as well. Therefore, if you have a machine gun firing that size of projectile, it will quite literally pulverize a brick wall or a pile of breeze blocks that you're sitting behind. It will destroy the cover that you're hiding behind from the machine gun. This is why they're still being used. It is brute strength. But what's interesting, again, because these are such large rounds, being fired with such ferocity and velocity that they can hit things from a mile or more. That is not an exaggeration. There is actually on Wikipedia a list of the longest actual verifiable sniper shots. And one of them in the top 10 is from a 30 caliber machine gun, because that round is capable of traveling such a long distance. Now, they weren't firing it on full automatic. They were firing it one shot at a time. And that's kind of impressive what they were doing. In that list, what I find interesting is the top six is a mixture of Australians, Canadians, Ukrainians, and one Brit. You have to get to number seven to actually get to your first American. Now, I'm not saying the Americans are bad shots or anything like that, but when everybody tends to think of, oh yeah, military, gung-ho, etc., it's like, well, do you know what? There are other militaries out there. And what's interesting about most of the top 10 is they're from pretty recent times. Funnily enough, fighting in Afghanistan was across mountain ranges. So hitting somebody a couple of miles away, you might have crossed the entire valley as you're on one side of the valley and the enemy's on the other side of the valley. And there was a reason you'd need to take a very long-range shot. Some of them are also happening in Iraq. So going back to the Barrett itself, it is a mean beast of a piece of equipment, as I've just said, when I was talking about RoboCop, it was clearly difficult to handle because you are never meant to fire it in your hands running along or with a shoulder strap like they're trying to do in RoboCop. This is why it looks like they're having an awful time of it. No, because this is such a large caliber weapon, you need to be lying prone with a bipod at the front of the rifle. It is a heavy steel chassised piece of equipment, and each bullet is going to weigh a considerable amount as well. It has a small magazine, 5-round capacity, but this is better than a lot of sniper's rifles where you might actually be individually putting in rounds with the bolt action. This also has a bolt action. It can be also fired semi-automatic, although quite why you'd want to do that unknown. But I can show you the joys of this because of all of these movies. I showed my youngest son Plane. It was just me and him sitting there of an evening, and I went, I think we should watch this while Mum isn't around, and he thoroughly enjoyed the movie, and the sniper gets out of the Barrett, and I went, this is my favourite weapon. I think you're going to enjoy it too. And the first thing you see it being used for is its correct usage, or its original usage. I referred to it as an anti-materiel weapon. What does that mean? It means that this is such a high caliber and able to hit from such a long distance, that's almost pointless to kill one person. It's better off disabling a vehicle. Now, something like that is not going to destroy a tank. Modern tanks have too thick armor to do this. However, the anti-materiel rifle is the descendant of the anti-tank rifle from World War I, where people had very high caliber rifles firing into the much thinner armor of World War I tanks. Sometimes it worked, sometimes it didn't. What did they start doing? They started to build thicker armor, which instantly neutralized the threat. Also, you're shooting blind because you don't know where people are standing in the tank. You're not guaranteed to hit people. So it had limited functionality, but that's a tank. That's a specific armored vehicle. When you look at the battlefields of World War II, Korea, Vietnam, etc., there are a lot of soft skin vehicles, as they're called. Think of Jeeps, Land Rovers, things like Humvees, etc. Those sorts of things have no armor to them, and if you fire a Barrett bullet, a 50 cal, into the engine block of one of those vehicles, that is going to cause so much damage, the engine will stop working. And good news, an engine block is pretty large. It's hard to miss. If something's driving along a road, it's not weaving around or anything like that, it is an easy shot to get. And the first thing you see in Plane is a truck comes round the corner, and he fires. Suddenly there's a big puff of steam coming out the engine, and the front lid, bonnet, call it whatever you want, flips up, and my son went, whoa. And then you see people hiding behind a soft skin vehicle, and the sniper can work out where the person is because they can see part of them popping out above the window, so just fires straight through the vehicle and kills the person on the other side. And again, my son went, that's a pretty amazing gun. Now, obviously, this is using prosthetics and special effects and visual effects, etc., but it gets the point across really well. That's one example of a sniper in a movie, but I find it interesting. And now let's go into snipers as a whole. It's a whole genre or type of character that you get in movies. One of the most famous examples of a sniper is the role played by Barry Pepper, the God-fearing sniper in Saving Private Ryan.
All my strength has to do to help me.
And he's one of the coolest characters. And why is he cool? Because he's the sniper. And in the scene at the beginning, when they're just off the beach, but now they're trying to take out the fortifications, the concrete defenses and pillboxes that the Germans have, he's muttering a prayer to himself as he then leans out, looks through his telescopic lens, and bang, there's a shot, a puff of red, and a German soldier goes down. The movie Stalingrad, or Enemy of the Gates, has focused in on the semi-legendary, how much of this is true versus how much of this is Soviet propaganda, unknown, of a duel between a German sniper and a Soviet sniper. All the Soviets are played by Brits, so Jude Law is not particularly Russian, but it's a solid film. But the play backwards and forwards, the positioning, the tactics of snipers is really interesting in the movie. It shows you it's a mind game. It's almost a bit like chess, only at much longer distances. And it's got lots of problems historically, but it's a solid movie. I would put it there with the likes of Plane, etc. So snipers appear in so many different types of movies. Sometimes they're the background character. Think of how many hostage movies where it's like, hey man, stay away from the window, I want to keep you alive. No, I'm just going to go down. And so the snipers are the ever-present danger in these negotiations with police, hostage negotiators, etc. And sometimes the snipers are waiting on standby, and other times they've got itchy trigger fingers, can't wait to do it, and they're almost like the enemy in the movie. But again, you've got this element of this mythologizing of something that is a legitimate role, a legitimate type of skilled military job, possibly police enforcement job. I first became aware of this type of specific rifle when I was playing a video game. Welcome to Battlefield 3. In my opinion, the most fun I've had with any Battlefield ever. Just so much fun with that. The way it works in these video games is as you move up the ranks, you get access to different types of weaponry. Not necessarily better, but perhaps does things in a different way. Sometimes they are genuinely better. So the longer you've been playing it, the more loadout you've got. But all of the initial weapons are good enough, shall we say. So I liked being a sniper. Now, this might get me a certain level of hate. And there was one map where people could spawn on an aircraft carrier in a bay, and then everything else is fighting. The thing I loved about the Battlefield games is how big they are. You got an aircraft carrier, you got water, you then got a landing point, you then got, you know, hills on the landing point, and then it keeps going onto an oil refinery. It's a desert environment. This is a huge area, but you need a huge area if you can also get into a tank, or you can get into an airplane or helicopter gunship. This is when I used to love it before everybody started trolling things and everything got super competitive. But I remember there was a sniper that was just miles away from me, but was getting really close with their shots. And I was not able to do that with my sniper rifle. But in the end, I got him. And I went over and I realized it's a gun I hadn't unlocked yet, and it was the Barrett. And I realized that, at least in the game, it's the longest ranged, most accurate rifle. However, you can only fire it lying down, so you're pretty prone. And the way it works, and this is a real thing that snipers have to consider, that when you open up that telescopic lens, it can get reflections off the sunlight. So if people start seeing a glint in the jungle or on a sand dune, you've just given away your position, and people could start firing artillery at you or heavy machine guns or whatever. And what invariably happened is you tried to take your shot, and if you did give your position away, all hell breaks loose. But you're so far away from everything else, you started running around. Now, I know lots of people don't like snipers in the game, but I was one of these people where sometimes I was counter-sniping. That is literally when one sniper is trying to take out another sniper. That's a lot of fun. And I just have some of my favorite game memories on multiplayer games on that particular map being a sniper, and also having fun with other snipers as they were lying on the deck of the aircraft carrier trying to hit me, the equivalent of a mile and a half away. And I started learning at that point the skills involved in snipers. Now, nothing like the real world, but what they accurately portray is something called, well, actually, do you know what? I'm going to tell you some more versions of it in media. And then I'll go into some of the complexities of it and how it is still valid today, even in the world of laser-guided weaponry, etc. Any kind of video game that's got a military slant to it, sniper's rifles will invariably be in there. One of my favorite ones, which doesn't exist.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
And everybody says it's one of the most satisfying, is the sniper's rifle in the Halo series. again, one of my favorite multiplayer moments in Halo 1 when I played a LAN version of it. So this is literally two Xboxes, two TVs connected in the same place. And me and my friend were having fun in the Box Junction one. I think it's called Blood Gulch. And it was just me and him, and we're just sort of randomly shooting each other. We're just playing around. We're just playing a game. In other words, just having fun with it. And I remember that I managed to get my hand on the sniper's rifle, and I lay down, and I saw my friend jumping up and down and mucking around on top of the base. And he stood there for a second. I took him out. Nice headshot from halfway across the map. And then he said, "Where did you shoot from?" So I stayed where I was, and then he went to where he was, and we sort of compared screens. And because of the zoom in from the sniper's rifle on this very early first generation Xbox, I could see him, but literally it was beyond the draw distance from his perspective. So I was, for all intents and purposes, invisible. That's why he stopped. He couldn't see me. He thought he was safe. Little did he know, I was ready to strike. So video games do it all the time. And like I say, they appear in movies quite a lot. Sometimes they're more serious than others. The movie that I mentioned earlier, The Hurt Locker, is one of these films that has led to a bit of controversy. At the time, it was seen as incredibly gritty and realistic, but there have been a number of veterans from the Iraq War saying, no, there are moments of this that are as silly as anything else. An example being, to show you how cool the Jeremy Renner character is and what a maverick he is, they've collected some IEDs, implemented explosive devices, and they're going to just blow them up. So everything's ready to go, and he goes, oh, wait, sorry, I forgot my gloves. And then he goes all the way down to the explosives that are ready to be detonated, picking up his gloves, comes back again, waves that he's got them, and then they detonate them. I remember somebody who was an expert in demolition saying, why would you do that? Those gloves cost nothing. You're unnecessarily going into an explosive area. At the beginning, you're given two pairs of them to begin with. Why is he so obsessed? This is just stupid. Nobody would ever risk themselves like that. I think that's a good example where you have to know what you're talking about to realize that what looks kind of realistic is as silly as you might as well put a cape on and say, he's Batman, or whatever. It isn't a perfectly realistic movie. The style of it is gritty and realistic. And there's this marvelous bit where there is a sniper's duel. This person's killed, and they didn't even see where it's coming from. So everyone grabs cover, and then they're waiting, and it's Anthony Mackie who's going to be taking the shot. Actually, I'm trying to remember which way around it is. You've got Falcon, and you've got Hawkeye, and the two of them are working together, which is how snipers actually work. Full disclosure, I've actually met a sniper from the parachute regiment from the British Army, and talking to him about it was just really interesting. I'll go into more of that in a moment. But snipers work in pairs. So you need a spotter, and you need the actual person who's going to take the shot. And you might be going, well, why can't they do both? Because the sniper almost has the definition of tunnel vision. They are worried about the target, whereas the spotter has to be aware of so many other things. Are there any other enemy forces in the area? Are they going to be given away? They need to be aware of their surroundings. Somebody can sneak up on a sniper on their own because they're just focusing everything forward, so you can sneak up behind them. Spotter's meant to be paying attention to the surrounding area. Also things like, has the wind direction changed? More on that later. This is why in the modern world, you need two people to be an effective sniping team. And that's what's going on in The Hurt Locker. But the other thing they show you is there's the weight. The thing about playing something like Battlefield is this person is just as far away as the video game can actually put people into the game. So they are a tiny, tiny little dot. But if I hit them, I'll literally see a score go up, like 100 points. And it's like, well, they're dead. But of course, in real life, that's not what happens. So they're waiting and waiting and waiting, and then they take the shot. They think they see the sniper. They take the shot. And it's like, well, did we get them? You know, are you going to be the first person to stand up and see what happens next? And so they just wait some more until they eventually think, well, maybe we got them. And then they go and check, and indeed they did get their person. This is why there are, as I've said in the past, you put things on a space station, it's like, oh, anything could go wrong at any time and we're all dead. Same thing with a submarine. It's the same thing with snipers. You just get a natural level of tension. It is a deadly version of hide and seek. This is why there's an entire movie series simply called Sniper, and then Sniper 2. And they've been in Clear and Present Danger. They've been in Hacksaw Ridge. So many different movies portray snipers. It's become a bit of a cliche. Some of them are far more realistic portrayals as others. Going back to Saving Private Ryan, I've watched videos of people critiquing snipers and their portrayal in movies. And the example they give is the sniper scene with the clock tower in Saving Private Ryan, which is about halfway through the movie. It's the scene where, spoilers, people forget Vin Diesel. It's easy to say what's Vin Diesel's best movie, because the answer is Saving Private Ryan. He's in it for about half of it, but spoiler alert for Saving Private Ryan, he gets shot by the sniper and he goes down.
He was on the ground before we heard the shot.
And this means that the group's sniper tries to work out where he is, and he goes, I think he's up in the bell tower because that's where I would be. And the thing that gets controversial is the guns are correct, the architecture is correct, the uniforms are accurate, everything is spot on. But what the snipers say is there's a misunderstanding of how bullet trajectories work, because at that distance, at that angle, the bullet would arc. It would not go as a straight line. And what do you see in the movie? He fires accurately in the movie. He fires. You see the puff of smoke from the firing of the rifle, and then you hear the crack of the gun, because light is faster than sound. And the bullet goes through the telescopic lens of the German sniper and then hits him in the eye and he's dead. Awesome. But at that distance, at that angle, it would have to be an arced bullet shot, in which case you can still kill him, but it won't go through the telescopic lens. It's an impossible bit of physics at that point. Now, that is referencing a real shot, but obviously it was under different circumstances from World War II, because yes, an Allied sniper did indeed hit a German sniper through the telescopic lens. There are all kinds of myths around this and reality. The other thing you see in, for example, the movie Sniper, and in so many of them, you get really weird reticules. You all know what I mean when you look through the sniper's rifle and you've got the crosshairs, and it's like, that is a very, very, very old-fashioned type of way of doing it. The modern one has got so many different other gradations on it to give you other ideas about distance, etc. So I think it's time to go into a bit of history. And what's interesting is, using the word sniper is anachronistic, but long-range shots have been important even before gunpowder. Perhaps the most shocking one is Richard the Lionheart ruled Britain from 1189 to 1199, so 10 years. He was in his 40s when he died. He'd been in so many battles. Why did he die? Because he was at a very minor siege, and in the evening he was out walking his dogs, and there were people laughing around with the French who were inside the castle. It was all fairly jovial. It was the end of the day. Nobody's expecting anything. But a teenage boy saw somebody at that distance, didn't know who it was, saw somebody walking the dogs without the armor on, picked up a crossbow, took a shot, and hit the King of England in the base of their neck where the shoulder is. And Richard lay there dying and said, I want to meet the person who took that shot. And they introduced him to the boy, and he said to his followers, this is the thing about Richard, he was a terrible king, but he's such an interesting story. And this is just coolness personified. He compliments this teenager on the shot and says to everybody, do nothing to this boy. It was a fair shot. You know, this is what war is. And then even gives him a bag of coins and sends him on his way and dies the next day from his wounds. Pretty awesome. What his followers did is completely disregard his orders and flay the boy alive, which is a horrible way. Basically tortured him to death. Horrible, horrible thing to do to this boy. Also disregarding what he said. But there we go. That's something that happened in the very end of the 12th century, which could be considered a sniper shot. There was another important moment in the siege of Constantinople in 1453, where, well, everybody knows the Ottomans eventually got in, there was this key moment where there was a breach in the wall, and the standard bearer, this has become legendary in Turkish history that's not very well known beyond, but this one lowly soldier who was a huge bull of a guy, he was a standard bearer and he planted the standard into the battlements and in essence rallied the troops to pour through the gap. But he was, just as he planted it, he was taken down by an arrow shot, which made the Ottoman ranks waver for a moment. So there have been moments. And of course, we can talk about Crecy and Agincourt and those sorts of things. Not really talking about individual shots there. But as one military expert has said, the history of warfare is the history of distance. We have always tried to get further and further away from each other. This is why guns, even when they weren't very effective, were being introduced, because it was just an easier way to keep the enemy at bay. The perfect war would be where neither side even sees each other. And that's where we are now with drone technology, intercontinental ballistic missiles. We're in Ukraine and we're talking about HIMARS systems that can fire 50 miles away, but there are other long-range cruise missiles being used, etc. Storm Shadows from Britain, the French equivalent. And these things can have longer ranges. We're giving them the shorter ranges of these long-range weapons. Literally, there are people who never see it coming on both sides. So this idea of length and longevity, I said I'd go into the technical points. And so let's imagine you're making a super long shot. Now, the longest shot on record is currently held by a Canadian, and this was in Iraq a few years ago. Well, actually, now it's about 6-7 years ago, but it's far more recent than you'd think. Oh, it's from World War II or something like that. And the shot was over 2 miles. Now, at these extreme distances, and remember, you may have a telescopic lens, but 2 miles, they're a dot. And also, you then have to factor in a whole bunch of physics getting involved. As I mentioned just briefly earlier, over the distance, the bullet starts to lose kinetic energy. So that means the trajectory starts going down. This is referred to as bullet drop. So literally, to hit the target at something like 2 miles plus, you will be aiming, I'm going to use meterage here, you might literally aim 3 meters above the person's head, taking into account that over the distance, the bullet will drop. The other thing is trying to take a headshot at that distance. That's just luck. You're going for the mass of the body because it's just a bigger target. You're highly unlikely to get a headshot at that range. And the next problem is speed equals distance over time. And this is the problem. Even though it is a supersonic projectile, it will now take seconds. Over 2 miles, it might take as long as 10 to 12 seconds to reach its target. Think of what you can do. Usain Bolt can run more than 100 meters in 12 seconds. So with that in mind, you don't shoot where they are. You shoot where they're going to be in a specific amount of time. So those are two factors. Third factor, wind. Because as soon as you're adding wind to it, and even on a day where there's almost no breeze whatsoever, there's still going to be some wind, and over 2 miles, that could be enough to blow the bullet from hitting the target to just missing the target. So you have to start anticipating wind speed, bullet drop, where are they going to be, time, and at 2 miles, this is going to sound amazing, but you also have to start taking into account the curvature of the Earth. Because over a 2 mile period, there's just enough curvature of an Earth to mean that if it was a straight line, it would be off by, again, enough that it would be a miss. So sniper shots are more of a science than they are just of brute strength. And that's what the Barrett can help them with, because it can at least get the bullet to the direction they need it to go. But a common thing to watch out for in movies is people shooting through windows. Something like a Barrett can absolutely make mincemeat of a window and can hit a target on the other side, but a bullet is a physical thing, as is a window, and there is enough resistance and thickness to slow the bullet down, but also to potentially send it on a slightly different trajectory. You may miss the shot. So people don't want to shoot through glass windows. They'd much rather shoot through an open window. Obviously, there has been a successful assassination of President of the United States via a sniper shot, or several, it must be said. I know, grassy knoll, etc., but even if you're going to go down the line of conspiracy theories, people are using sniper rifles, they're not using handguns or something like that. So they've changed history, they make movies, and they're just a really interesting element. Also, I'm going to do a quick plug for my book, Silent Crossroads, because in it, particularly in the first half of the book, there is a sniper in it. And after I'd done all the research from being impressed by things like Battlefield 3 and reading up on things and just doing a bit of a deep dive on the world of the sniper, I really did my best to try and emulate the science and sophistication of taking the correct kind of sniper shot. And I was really pleased with the response I had with that particular character in the book. So if that sounds interesting, if I've made you interested in snipers, it's not just movies and TV shows, it can also be in books and be thrilling in its own way in the written word, do check out Silent Crossroads, which is available both as a book, a proper book, like as an e-book or a paperback, but also as an audiobook read out by the editor of this lovely podcast, Mr. Greg Chapman. Now, I said I'd go back to the paratrooper, and I will talk about him in a moment, but as always, please click subscribe. It isn't always quite as blokey and gunny as this, but I'm having fun. I hope you have too with this one. Please click subscribe. Please give us a review. I'm on Twitter, X, whatever, and I'm at Jem Deducci there and on Threads. I always tweet out what the latest episode is. If you could please retweet it and tell people about the podcast, it'll help it all grow. Really appreciate it. Thank you very much. So, the paratrooper. I met him doing paintballing. He was a friend of a friend, and my friend sensibly said, I'm going to bring an excellent shot with me. And what I found interesting was following this elite soldier around a stupid paintball field. I figured the safest place to be was directly behind him. And what I found interesting is when we all like moved stupidly into position or whatever, he was crouching and he double-timed it. Why are you all walking around? You want to get to your position as quickly as possible. You want to get to cover as quickly as possible. Don't dawdle. And so I was keeping up with him. He wasn't going unbelievably fast, but it was just interesting how, to him, this was not a game, this was a simulator. And then everybody else was worried about dirtying their overalls that you're given as part of the thing, but he just threw himself onto the ground. He was lying in the dirt, and I again lay directly behind him. His legs splayed, so he was like the V shape. He was balancing himself. He made sure that he had a proper grip and proper support on the paintball rifle, and then he started firing, and all I could hear was swearing, because of course he is used to a high precision gun worth thousands of pounds, as opposed to this cheap air compressed thing that sprayed paint. And you could see he was pointing it in the right way, but the paintballs would veer to the left and paintballs would veer to the right, and I was about as good a shot as him. However, I have no doubt that he, you know, in any other circumstances he wins. But he told me some tactics, that in Iraq they would drive in with a huge truckload of people, and then everybody would get out. So they knew that they were being spied on by the Iraqis. So everybody's out or questioning people, etc. But the reason why they were there is two of the people in the group were the sniper and the spotter. And they would quietly make their way up to the top of a taller building. And then they would remain. Everybody get back into the truck. So it looked like everybody got out and everybody got back in again. People didn't realize that they had just infiltrated two people to spot the area. Now, whether or not that's used anymore, because with modern day drones that might make it redundant, I can't swear to that. You've also got the movie Jarhead that is all about the sniper and the spotter and the two of them working together. So this is something, and there are loads of other types of sniper rifles. The bolt action means that when you fire, yes, it's slower, but you're meant to hit the target first time, but then you can pick up, whereas with an automatic weapon, it's spraying bullet casings everywhere. They'll be able to spot where you were later on. You want to leave as little evidence of where you were and what you were doing at any given point. And so the other interesting thing is, generally, they go for high-value targets. You're not there just killing an average soldier. Or if you are, you're wounding them so other people have to go and pick them up and move them away because then you can shoot another one, etc. You also see this in Enemy at the Gates, shooting communications people and officers and things like that. That's going to cause far more disruption. Last thing I'm going to say is Ukraine today. With these long-range weapons, you think that snipers may not necessarily be going on. There are a number of snipers that are even using social media talking about how it's still an absolutely vital skill to be used on the front lines, even in the 21st century, in the 2020s. And they indeed, Ukraine has been asking for various assistance and weaponry. They've actually now developed their own extremely heavy anti-materiel, which can be used as an extreme long-range sniper rifle called the Alligator.
We interrupt your podcast to bring you some breaking news.
After recording this, there has actually been a new sniper all-time record shot. Vyacheslav Kovalsky of the Ukrainian Army in November of 2023. It's been recently confirmed he was using this new Alligator sniper rifle, which is the Barrett on steroids. It's about 6'6" long, and the shot was 3.8 kilometers, which is 4,156 yards. It was over a major river, hitting a Russian soldier on the other side who clearly didn't even know he was in the crosshairs. An amazing shot and bringing everything up to date. The Alligator looks similar to the Barrett. It's certainly not the same. It's kind of broader at the base end of it. By the way, Barrett, I really do, it's double R, double T. Type in Barrett M80 and you'll get a picture of something that looks about as gun-like as you're ever going to see. It's got a very distinctive front, allows it to spread out the exhaust gases of when you fire it. The whole thing is designed to be as accurate as possible. The reason why it's got a long barrel, which is obviously rifled with the swirly patterns to allow the bullet to spin. It's got a long barrel, so it's now set on its trajectory when it finally leaves the barrel at the muzzle. It's just a really impressive piece of kit. The Ukrainians now have their own version. So that's it from me. Hope you really enjoyed this one. And as always, another episode coming soon.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Hi, I'm Ando.
And I'm Fer.
And we host Niñas Bien podcast.
We want to invite you to listen to our show.
Niñas Bien means good girls in Spanish. But you have to know that this is not a podcast for good girls.
Or for girls at all. It is a comedy podcast. So everyone is welcome to listen.
We talk about sex, relationships, technology.
We recommend movies and TV shows and discuss pop culture in general.
And there is Chisme Ajeno too.
A section we have just to gossip about everyone. So you'll find something you like here.
And you'll practice your Spanish.
The cleanest Spanish you'll find, we promise.
And if you already hablas español,
vamos a ser tus nuevas amigas. We'll be your friends for the non-Spanish speakers.
New episodes every Monday and Thursday.
Hosted by Acast and available to all audio platforms.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com